Hancock & Whitney Bank's economic update call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during this call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. Good morning. This is David Lundgren. If you have any questions, please go ahead and email those over to me at David_Lundgren, L-U-N-D-G-R-E-N, at HancockBank.com. And this morning I have with me John Portwood, our Chief Investment Officer, and Luther McDougall, Investment Director. And John, where else would we start but the Eurozone? And over the weekend, it appeared that maybe we had made some progress, and you know, I guess the last couple of days, the news hasn't been as good. It seems like we've taken a few steps back. Why don't you bring us up to date on where things stand?
Okay. In the Eurozone's search for a grand solution to their sovereign debt crisis, I guess, you know, this is attempt number three, I believe, if I'm counting correctly. And unfortunately, by Friday afternoon, it became apparent that the markets really didn't like what they were seeing. David and I were traveling that Friday, and Friday afternoon when we heard that the Italian bond was back up, the 10-year bond was back up above a 6% yield, we kind of figured that maybe, you know, things were not going as well as they could be. Here's why that 6% number is important to the Italian bond. Economists who have studied Italy's finances do not believe that a sustained cost of borrowing above 6% for their long-term bonds would be possible given the amount of debt they currently have and what their growth rate is. So they say that Italy would probably go the way of Greece if they had to pay 6.5% to, say, 7% for sure for 10-year bonds in their borrowing program. So certainly that did not send out a good sign for the markets. Also, last night, I believe it was last night, Papandreou, who is the premier of Greece, made noises, or maybe he did call for a referendum from the Greek people about whether they should accept the harsh terms of the other Eurozone members and basically live in depression and austerity for about the next 10 or 15 years, or maybe perpetual, since some people don't believe Greece can pay back their debt at all. So, you know, that, of course, is going to produce some turmoil in the markets this morning. But really, when you get down to the bottom line with this thing, the European Central Bank was sort of left out of the picture as far as solving the crisis. And a number of analysts and researchers who have looked at the problem have always believed that it would come down eventually to the European Central Bank acting as lender of last resort and basically putting up the money. But the Germans won't let them do it, and apparently it's not really in the ECB's authority to do that, you know, unless they change the rules for the European Central Bank. But it's probably going to boil down to that eventually, that they will have to step in and spend a lot of euro to solve the problem, because if they manage to get Greece under control, then they have to figure some way to prevent Italy and Spain and Portugal from going the way of Greece. But also recently, Spain and Portugal issued a call for the U.S. to help and come in and spend more money to help them. So, you know, the situation appears to be deteriorating relatively quickly from, I guess, the false calm that might have existed a few weeks ago. And it may bring the ECB in much quicker than anybody anticipated, you know, to really fix the problem. The bottom line, I guess, is that there are probably more crises to come unless we do get the ECB acting as a lender of last resort. It could be that people are becoming kind of used to this after a while, I guess. The markets, I guess, aren't quite used to it yet, given what is likely to be happening this morning, but they're stumbling toward a solution, and I guess it's going to take you know, a big bang of some sort, like the European Central Bank, be involved to finally solve it.
So we'll be talking about this again next month, I presume, and months to come?
I would guess. Over the weekend, one economist who looked at it fairly carefully guessed that we had maybe 2 or 3 months before something else would blow up. But actually, it may be like weeks, considering what's happening this morning.
Okay. Well, let's shift back to the U.S., and I guess, if you go back to late July, August, there was concern that the U.S. economy was slipping into recession. Economic numbers started to improve in September, and the first estimate on real GDP for the third quarter came in at 2.5%. So I think that was, generally a positive outcome in terms of economic growth here in the U.S. And I think at one point during the third quarter, a lot of economists were projecting the chances of heading into recession were 40% to 50% range. Has that improved any? Or the likelihood of heading into recession?
The third quarter certainly, puts any recession call out, a quarter or two in the future, I guess, at least. You may remember that, earlier this year, we thought that the recession fears were overdone given what the underlying picture looked like. And, we thought that has been the case up to this point. In fact, one particular indicator that I'd like to look at that has proven fairly accurate from a leading sense of maybe as much as 6 months ahead of time comes from the Consumer Metrics Institute, which tracks online consumer discretionary sales. And that part of the retail sales business has been growing very rapidly in recent years. In any case, that began to improve in May and June of this year, sort of giving us some idea that, what we've seen in terms of retail sales in the last few months was coming. Their numbers are still, assuming that is a credible leading indicator, their numbers are still good enough to suggest that the fourth quarter will probably be pretty good as well, and maybe along the lines of what we saw in the third of about 2% or so. Unfortunately, the threat of recession, while lower, I guess, in the near term, still remains given the fact that most of Europe will probably be in a recession in 2012. The Chinese economy is slowing, and there are fears that their real estate bubble, if that's what it really is close to bursting, and that they have a shadow banking system somewhat like what we had in the United States. It's kind of out of control, too. So there are enough issues for next year going forward to make it seem that, at best, economic growth rates in the U.S. are going to be staying in that 2% range if things work out fairly well, with the threat of recession, I guess, always being there. Now, one thing to think about when we talk about recession in a low-growth environment, it's not likely to be the kind of recession we don't think that would be comparable to what we've seen in the post-World War II era, where you have like minus 3% GDP growth rates and that sort of thing. It may be that we slip from 2% to maybe 1 or minus 0.5 or, something that is more like stagnation rather than recession. So, later the NBER may say, well, yeah, it really was a recession. But right now we're still having kind of a mixed picture, and the people I think that are calling for a recession are looking at the typical post-World War II leading indicator arrangement that suggested certain things over the last 50 or 60 years. It may not suggest that today, at a very low low growth rate. So, we're still sort of in that, I think, muddle through area where we had slow growth, probably no recession, and we probably look better than anybody else in the world at this point, I would guess.
Okay. I guess earlier this year, there was a lot of debate and discussion in regards to the debt ceiling and the deficit issues that we're having here in the United States, and it really weighed on the market. For several months now, the focus has shifted away from the U.S. and focused on the Eurozone debt issues. But I think that's about to change. Later this month, the Super Committee is anticipated to announce its recommendations. And is that going to become an issue for the market again? And what kind of results would you consider to be a market-moving announcement on either side, plus or negative?
The super committee is supposed to come up with an answer to the our debt issue within the next couple of weeks, based on the news that so far has been released from the super committee discussions. It doesn't look like anything very significant is going to happen. So, right now there seems to be a standoff in the committee about coming up with a reasonable solution. They're supposed to save, I believe, come up with something to save $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. Current expectations are pretty low. So if they don't come up with anything that's very exciting, it might not have much impact on the markets going forward, since, I think everybody believes we're probably in a long-term process about working something out like that. Something that, if they come up with absolutely nothing at all, then that could be a market-moving event, given what's happening in Europe. It may present a picture of politicians on both sides of the Atlantic being unable to come together and come up with a solution that makes sense. Something else I didn't mention about the economic situation. Next year, we've got some stimulus that's running off. Part of the mood is one of going toward austerity anyway, which may or may not be a good thing, depending on which economist you talk to. But if nothing is done between now and year end, we'll lose the extra stimulus produced by accelerated depreciation, by the reduction in Social Security taxes that's been going on. And I think there's one other item. What is that other item that's out there that unemployment insurance. So those three things are due to end at the end of this year. If they're not renewed, then that's going to be some added pressure, I guess, on the economy going into next year. But I don't think the expectations are very great near term, but if they do absolutely nothing, then that could be a negative. It's highly unlikely that they will come up with anything that is so positive that it will have a positive impact on the market. So I guess the best we can hope for is a neutral event.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some good news. Stocks have tailed off a little bit. They're off this morning. They were off yesterday. But October was really an incredible month for the market. S&P 500 was up almost 11%. The Dow up almost 10%. Small caps over 15% for the month. So really strong numbers. The month alone brought the Dow and the S&P 500 back into positive territory for the year. And I guess also positive is that many companies reported third quarter earnings during the month, and results were mostly positive. The S&P 500 is on pace for its seventh consecutive double-digit year-over-year earnings growth rate, and revenues are growing at almost a 10% clip. I think that that news has kind of been lost on the market with all the things that are going on around the globe. These are pretty impressive numbers. Is this rally for real, and what's your outlook?
September 30 or thereabouts was the low point for the market indices this year. At that point, it looked like the market was somewhat undervalued and underpriced based on even modest earnings estimates going forward for, say, the next 3 to 5 years, and based on a very modest economic growth rate of, say, 2% or so instead of the usual 3%. So at that point, stocks were reasonably attractive, not as cheap as they were in March of 2009, of course, but reasonably attractive given modest estimates for next year. The rally that we've had since, of course, has eaten up a lot of that, valuation number. Right now you can guess that, valuation is still positive, but there has been really no reason to estimate faster economic growth over the next several years than we had before. So from this point on, it's not likely that we'll see, a market rally of that sort, in the future. We're thinking for the major market indices, probably some forward progress, but maybe not, a a significant amount of gain in the near term. Now, this morning, we haven't mentioned that this morning, I guess, what the market's doing, but the market is reacting negatively to what's happening in the Eurozone. And we still seem to be in that, you know, period of very high volatility where people can get awfully disturbed about what's happening in the markets without looking at the underlying fundamentals. And, you know, unless the world comes to an end and we have modest growth of some sort, then, you know, somewhere between here and where the markets were September 30 represents pretty decent value for common stocks. The only problem we have from an investor standpoint is getting used to the volatility that we're going to see in the near term. On the earnings front, profit margins are about as high as they've ever been in history and aren't likely to get significantly better. That suggests that if we have modest economic growth next year, we're likely to continue to see earnings gains, but they won't be of the double-digit variety. I think current estimates are thinking somewhere in the single digits going forward, and if we don't get a rise in price earnings multiples, which is highly unlikely in this kind of investment environment, you know, then you can look forward to, you know, say a single-digit return from common stocks next year. But again, it's just going to be a very volatile period. September 30, for example, using some reasonable estimates for annualized returns looking out 3 to 5 years, you could come up with a number like 8% annualized for common stocks from, you know, the September 30 point to some point out, say, 3 or 4 years. The only thing these valuation measurements never tell you is what the path of returns will be like from here to there. And, you know, given the volatility we've seen from day to day lately, I think any investor looking at a long-term return that might be pretty decent needs to understand they're going to have to accept a lot of volatility along the way. And it's going to be hard to really ascertain exactly when this type of thing will occur unless the Eurozone problem, for example, gets really solved and the ECB steps in and everything calms down over there. And you know, that's certainly going to happen eventually. We just don't know exactly when. So that's the story. We're sort of, I would say at this point, you know, the upside on the market is probably, in terms of the market indices, is probably less than 10% from here. The downside may be somewhat similar, you know, in terms of volatility of what's happening. So I think everybody needs to continue to look long-term, you know, buy high-quality securities, pay attention to value, and maybe ignore the noise and the volatility that seems to hit us about every other day lately. I know that's hard to do, but that's probably what we need to do.
Okay. Thank you, John. Luther, good morning.
Morning.
All right, let's talk about fixed income. And during the month of October, 10 and 30-year U.S. Treasury yields were up about 20 basis points. And even before yesterday's big move, that number was closer to 40 basis points. So you saw a pretty significant rise in rates during the month. The sell-off in bonds, was it due more to money moving back into stocks, improved economic numbers, something else?
Well, I think it was a combination of those two and then a little euphoria over the potential for a solution to the European debt crisis. We actually started the quarter with the 10-year Treasury at 190, and we actually were up 50 basis points at one point, albeit only for one day, up to 240. And then by the end of the month, we were at a 210 yield. And actually, as of today, we're back to only being up about 10 basis points. But during the early part of the month, I think there was a little bit of a move up in rates as the economic numbers were probably a little bit better than expected. Of course, as mentioned by John earlier, corporate earnings are coming in a little bit better than expected. And then as we got closer and closer to a potential solution, if only in words, to the European crisis, you continue to see more and more money move into the stock market and out of the bond market, pushing interest rates up. Now, the one thing that's still out there is that although the economic numbers have come in a little bit better, consumer confidence is still tepid at best. I think if you look back in history, instead of consumer confidence moving up to the economic numbers, then what actually happens is consumer spending stays slow or even slows down, you have the economic numbers coming down to consumer confidence, which I guess kind of reinforces what John was saying, is that, you know, we there may have been light at the end of the tunnel, but there is no holy grail there. We are seeing some signs of improvement, but it's not across the board. So, you know, the bond market, like the stock market, overreacts and to both good news and bad news, and maybe most of last month was just a little bit of an overreaction to what may happen in Europe. But overall, there has been a slight increase, which I think you could attribute to the fact that the economic numbers are a little bit better than expected. Not great, but a little bit better.
Okay. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, recently declared bankruptcy, and they're overdue on about $65 million worth of debt. The issue was for a trash-to-energy incinerator. This is a pretty significant issue. Is this an isolated case? First question. And then we've talked a great deal about debt issues involving countries. What's the financial condition of states, cities, and other municipalities?
I believe Harrisburg was definitely an isolated case. This is one of those few instances that occurs where a municipality really gets into a business that it has no right being in, and in this case, it went sour on them. This happens periodically. It's usually deals such as this where it's one very large issue, if you will, or it's, you know, undeveloped real estate, or it's something else that you're putting all of your bet, if you will, on the success of one particular project, and in this particular case, it didn't work out. If you look at the financial conditions of the states, what we've seen is up until the most recent quarter, we saw 7 quarters of improving revenues in the majority of the states across the country. Last quarter was the first quarter where we actually saw a small decline. But the overall debt situation is still I won't say it's great, but it's still pretty good. If you look at the number of issues that have defaulted, and there are always defaults, even in the best of times. Last quarter, there were 12 defaults totaling $126 million. The same quarter in 2010, there were 18 defaults, and in 2009, there were 24 defaults. So maybe not in numbers, and I don't have the numbers at my fingertips, but as in the number of faults, we've definitely seen a decline. For the first 9 months of this year, defaults totaled $949 million, which is only one quarter of the total defaults for the same time period last year, signifying that things are definitely getting better if you look at the worst-case scenarios. And if you look at it versus corporate debt, it's only one-tenth of the failures on the corporate debt market. So overall, I would say there's still a lot of concern in the municipal bond market, but I would say that things are not getting as bad as originally predicted by some, and we'll leave names out of it. But what we've seen is a continued increase or improvement in overall fiscal structure. We have seen for the last quarter a small decline in tax revenues. But on the other hand, we're also seeing a reduction in debt issuance. So the overall total amount of debt outstanding actually fell by 3% over the last quarter. So we're beginning to see some signs that not only has debt been falling, but that we're getting revenues are staying okay, but we're also getting expense control in many different instances. A lot of it is hopefully some reprieve from a lot of the long-term debt, specifically pension debt, that a lot of municipalities have, and that's going to take a long time to work through. But we're also seeing expenses being cut in other areas. So I would say there still is concern in the municipal market. I would say things are actually a little bit better than they were at this time last year. I don't think the concerns will go away anytime soon. We'll continue to have defaults. Like I said, we've always had them. But if you stick to reasonable credit quality issues and issues that are not based upon the success or failure of one particular project, you know, the general obligation, and even better probably would be utility, sewer, water revenue, or essential revenue bonds that regardless of the economic outlook, you still have, you know, people continuing to pay their debts there. But overall, I think the municipal market is doing better than most people expected at this time.
Okay, great. Thank you, Luther. If anyone has any questions, please go ahead and email them to me, to david_lundgren@hancockbank.com. And John, the first question, I'm kind of scared to ask you, but I'm going to anyway. Occupy Wall Street. Any market impact from this movement?
I guess it's symptomatic of the political and social turmoil that arises during these secular bear periods. And if you've read any of our commentary about the long-term trends, you'll know that we've argued for some time that, you know, we're living through one of those long-term consolidations in the major market indices, where the major market indices either decline or go sideways for a long period of time. And it's difficult to make money buying index funds, for example. You know, you need much more diversification around different asset classes. Well, if you look back at the two previous secular bears that we experienced, one was 1929 to 1942, to use one example, 1966 to 1982. If you look at both of those, thinking again about this Occupy Wall Street thing that's going on now, you had a lot of social and political turmoil and things like that going on, I guess, during those periods. So that's kind of symptomatic of the kind of period we're going through. The political and social turmoil, I guess, has risen to prominence more since the last presidential election than we saw earlier, but it's certainly symptomatic of the kind of thing we're going through. So what it suggests is that there will be no quick solution, I guess, to the political and social issues of the day, and they're likely to drag on for a while, which would be, again, a common occurrence during these long periods of consolidation that we see in the major market indices. This is going to be in the new highlights. I'm having to rewrite that thing a couple of times because events are changing so rapidly, but in any case, one of the things in there is a discussion of, you know, where we might be in this secular bear cycle in terms of length, you know, using some historical examples and some recent research. It may last for a while. The last one lasted 16 years from beginning to end. This one could be at least as long or perhaps longer, maybe 20 years or more. And lest anybody get overly excited about that prognostication, we need to recognize where we were back in 2000 and where we are now in terms of relative valuation. In 2000, stocks were massively overvalued if you look at just the major indices, the cap-weighted indices that are driven by what was happening in the technology stocks. And if you look at the valuation then and project it forward about 10 years, you could easily come up with an estimate of a negative return. Well, here we are 11 and three-quarter years into this big consolidation, and if you bought the S&P 500 index at the peak in 2000, your return is a negative 0.4% loss annualized every year for the last 11 and three-quarter years. Well, where are stocks now, even the major indices, valued? You know, what's the valuation look like compared to that? Well, if you look at the valuation of stocks today, just looking at the major indices, and forget about what's happening to the average stock that is often quite a lot better, you come up with a number of 5 to 6% annualized looking forward, say, for the next 10 years. So the market generally, just looking at the major indices, is more attractive than it was back in 2000. And since that time, by the way, the last 11 and three-quarter years, high yield bonds, your basic investment quality bonds have substantially outperformed the market indices, which, you know, their returns are like 6-7% annualized for the last 12 years almost compared to a negative number for the market indices. The average stock, looking at small cap stocks or equal weighted indices, 5-6% annualized return. So, you know, while it hasn't been an easy market for investors who are used to just buying the market and holding and forgetting about it, there have been plenty of opportunities for people who have had more diversified portfolios who have been involved in the stock selection process to do well. So even if this secular bear lasts for, say, another 7 or 8 years, which is certainly possible, you know, given history and what's going on today, there are going to be plenty of opportunities out there to make some money in stocks. It's just going to be very difficult to get a 10 or 15% return. That's the downside of this kind of situation. We're probably looking at high single digits, but at least, you know, bonds have outperformed stocks for the last 30 years. You might have seen that in the headlines recently. That's something that rarely, if ever, happens. I don't think it's happened since the 1800s. But in any case, bonds are unlikely to deliver that kind of return relative to stocks going forward because bonds are beginning to look relatively more expensive. Not that they're not something that everybody should own, but they're beginning to look relatively more expensive. And stocks are beginning to look relatively less expensive. So if we do have another number of years of this kind of long-term consolidation, the future looks a lot brighter for the market indices anyway now than it did back in 2000. So anyway, for what it's worth, you know, that's kind of the long-term story. And there'll be cycles within cycles as we go through this period.
Okay. Thank you, John. I think we'll conclude our call there, and thank you, everyone, for joining us, and look forward to having the call again next month. Thank you.